Good afternoon. What a splendid day we're having today. It's noon. This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web at KMXT.org. Translators in the villages, K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Karlik, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. 51 beautiful degrees outside now with humidity at 71%, east wind at 12 miles an hour blowing. Visibility at the airport and here in town is 10 miles. It says we're supposed to have maybe some scattered showers mixed in with the sunshine. High should be about where we're at now. South winds 10 miles an hour, only a 30% chance of rain though. Isolated showers between 10 and 1 tonight with partly cloudy skies, a low around 43. Southeast winds 5 to 10. Only 20% chance of showers tonight. Tomorrow, again, mostly sunny with a high near 51. East winds 5 to 10, up to 10 to 15 in the morning. NPR News headlines coming right up.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Christy Grimm, one in a series of inspectors general to be ousted after reportedly crossing President Trump, is giving her side of the story to members of the Democratic-led House Oversight Committee. Grimm was the top watchdog at the Department of Health and Human Services when her office reported on shortages at U.S. hospitals on the front lines of the pandemic. The president accused Grimm of producing a fake dossier. NPR Selena Simmons-Duffin reports on Grimm's reception in Congress today.
The tone of this video briefing was highly partisan. Many Republicans painted the Inspector General's report as hyperbolic and the health system as overall weathering the pandemic without getting overwhelmed. Democrats asked Grimm about President Trump's nominating a new IG to replace her after the hospital survey came out.
I personally and professionally cannot let the idea of providing unpopular information drive decision making.
Grimm emphasized she's a career official and it's the OIG's job to protect the public from fraud and mismanagement. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
The Republican governors of Florida and Georgia are offering their states to host their party's national convention in August if North Carolina doesn't pan out. President Trump's not happy that the governor of North Carolina, a Democrat, cannot guarantee that it would be safe enough by August to allow tens of thousands of people in one space for the gathering during a pandemic. Charlotte spent more than a year planning, including lodging. Moving to another state could prove to be a logistical nightmare as a dispute fuels a politics versus public health debate. Johns Hopkins University disease trackers are reporting that among the states in question, Florida has the most coronavirus cases at 52,000, followed by Georgia with more than 43,000. North Carolina has the lowest number of confirmed cases in that group with fewer than 25,000. Well, physical distancing and masks are the order of the day for traders on their first day back on the floor at the New York Stock Exchange, and the day ended on a pretty high note. The Dow closed up more than 2% or 529 points to end the day at 24,995. And Pierre Scott Horsley says that's due in part to an uptick in consumer confidence.
Investors welcome signs that the economy may be slowly climbing out of its deep coronavirus hole. Consumers were slightly more confident about prospects in May than they were in April. Sales of new homes also ticked up a fraction. And California began to relax one of the nation's toughest stay-at-home orders, allowing retailers to open their doors for limited in-store shopping. At the New York Stock Exchange, traders were allowed back on the floor for the first time in more than 2 months. The number of on-site traders was limited, and those who were there wore face coverings. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo rang the opening bell to start today's market rally. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486 4499.
Good afternoon. It's about 5 minutes after noon. The economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic has made a large dent in Kodiak's employment sector. In the month of April, Kodiak's unemployment jumped to 10.6%, its highest month since 2009, and the highest April unemployment since 1994. A total of 584 unemployment claims were filed from Kodiak last month, the highest number of monthly claims since December of 2013. This news comes in the wake of startling job loss numbers recorded by the state's Department of Labor data released on Friday. The data indicates that 42,000 jobs were lost in Alaska in April, and the statewide unemployment average was 13.7%. Even though Kodiak's unemployment rate of 10.6% comes in below the state average, Kodiak has seen its unemployment claims double from 250 in March to 584 in April. Kodiak's February and March unemployment rates were some of the lowest the borough has ever seen. February posted a 4.4% unemployment rate, Kodiak's lowest February in more than 30 years. March posted a 4.2% unemployment rate, Kodiak's lowest March since 1991. The state is responding to this economic impact by distributing $1.5 billion in federal economic aid for Alaska communities, businesses, and industries impacted by COVID-19. And as the governor announced last week, PFDs of $1,000 for each Alaska resident will be distributed July 1st. You can read the Department of Labor's employment reporting at kmxt.org. Every summer, a large chunk of Coast Guard personnel end their duties in Kodiak and rotate to a different posting, replaced by a new cohort of service members and their families. It's a season filled with garage sales, moving boxes, and travel to new stations scattered across the country. This year, Coast Guard families are struggling with the added logistical challenges of transferring during a global pandemic. Kaylee Wood is transferring to Hawaii with her wife and their dog to take up her new role as the executive officer on a fast response cutter, William Hart. She says pandemic-related obstacles like flight changes trigger other plan changes, like pushing back the start date on her new orders.
I mean, just things are ever-changing. So, like, we didn't expect our flights to get changed. So that just, you know, added an extra day to our travel, and then it added an extra hotel day. And then administratively, it adds a lot of paperwork.
Tricia Bartel works for the Arts Council. After her husband received orders to transfer to North Carolina in January, she said they began the process of buying a new home and scheduling a road trip down south. Bartel said their transfer plan has changed weekly since the pandemic began. Her family had initially planned to take their time on the drive, but COVID-19 precautions like a 24-hour travel time limit through the Yukon Territory have required them to speed things up.
We're encouraged not to take any personal leave, to just directly drive to the next place, which works out because, you know, campgrounds are closed and there's really no seasonal parks that are open. So there's really nothing to do but drive.
In 23 years, Bartel's family has moved more than 8 times. One of the hardest parts of any transfer season is saying goodbye to a place that served as home. And she says that's even more difficult when interacting with people puts them at risk.
I mean, just things are ever-changing. So, like, we didn't expect our flights to get changed. So that just, you know, added an extra day to our travel, and then it added an extra hotel day. And then administratively, it adds a lot of paperwork.
Seems odd. Transfer season is stretched over a longer period this summer to allow for scheduling changes and give time for incoming members to quarantine for 2 weeks before beginning their new roles. Wood said transfers usually happen in June and July, but this year's service numbers are given from May 1 to September 30th. The National Guard says it wants more people to enlist now.
In a Winston-Salem warehouse, North Carolina Army National Guard soldiers with the 130th Maneuver Enhancement Brigade have been assigned a different task than usual, inspecting eggs for a local food bank. Around the country, the National Guard has been activated for COVID duty. Guardsmen are running mobile testing teams in Florida, sewing face masks in Indiana, even planting cantaloupe, peppers, and squash on a nonprofit farm in North Carolina, whose regular volunteers have been forced to stay home. North Carolina National Guard spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Matthew DeVivo says it's a unique and historic mission.
We've been working a lot with the food banks across the state, the large food banks in Raleigh and Winston-Salem, and our soldiers and airmen have been helping them plant seeds in the farmland that they use to cultivate vegetables because the volunteers just aren't there. And our guardsmen have been candling eggs, looking with high light onto an egg to see if there's cracks and if it's still serviceable to be given out at food banks. Every single guardsman we've spoken to feel like it's so rewarding to be doing these different types of missions that went not necessarily they ever thought they'd be doing.
In Denver, Colorado guardsmen rolled carts down the corridors of Equality Inn, providing contactless meal delivery to members of the city's homeless population now residing there. Their stepped-up role in the community might be one reason for what the guard says is a big jump in the number of people applying to join. Lieutenant Colonel George O'Neill is in charge of recruiting for the Colorado Army National Guard.
Close to the 1st of April, we started to see an increase in calls with more traffic to our website and a lot more interest on social media.
More than 46,800 National Guard soldiers and airmen have been mobilized across all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, a number that far outstrips the post-9/11 response and is ticking up toward the activation numbers that followed Hurricane Katrina. With so many guardsmen headed out, potential recruits keep coming in. National Guard Bureau data show recruiting leads for the Army National Guard are up 90% compared to last year. O'Neill says layoffs and furloughs in the job market could be playing a role.
We obviously ask our, applicants why they're interested in joining the National Guard, and some of them are more frank with us than others that, they want to help out and get involved, or some are, unemployed and negatively affected by the virus.
In California, recruiters who normally meet with 2 to 5 people each day are fielding requests from 10 to 15, according to Master Sergeant Alberto Gastelum, Recruiting and Retention Section Chief for San Diego County. But he says the boost is coming from people who just want to be part of the team.
The exposure that we're currently having with everything that we're doing here in California and nationwide has made a big impact. It's an advertisement that they can see what their soldiers normally do. So all the citizens here, the residents in our state, are jumping on board to say, I want to be part of that. I want to be able to help.
Jake Stanish is one of those people. He is a public school teacher who moved from Boston to California weeks before the pandemic shut everything down, including his hopes of substitute teaching. So Stanish has a lot of time on his hands. And, he says, seeing the guards' response to this public health crisis was inspirational.
There's so much need. Even if it's just helping, like here in San Diego, the Guard is helping at food banks and to provide, PPE from the federal government. There's just a lot going on that the Guard can help with.
For Stanish, it was the motivation he needed to apply to join. And now he has his application documents in order and his physical scheduled. Stanish says whether it's deploying to Afghanistan or at a neighborhood food bank, he's eager to help wherever he's needed. I'm Jennifer Brooklyn in Durham, North Carolina.
The story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Bartell, I am going to blame you one last time. I played the wrong, it popped up the wrong thing, and I didn't play what it was supposed to play, so I'm going to finish Kavitha's story here about transfer season. In 23 years, Bartell's family has moved more than 8 times. One of the hardest parts of any transfer season is saying goodbye to a place that served as home, and she says that's even more difficult when interacting with people puts them at risk.
You know, when you have this timeline built in your head and you only got 6 months left on this amazing island, you want to check up all these things that you want to do before you leave. But then the community shuts down, so a lot of that wasn't possible, and you couldn't share special moments with friends, people you might not cross paths with for a while.
It's going to be hard saying goodbye to you there, Bartell. I didn't want to drop that out of her story. Again, transfer season stretched over a longer time this summer to allow for scheduling changes, and Wood says transfers are usually happening in June and July, but this year they're being given from May through September 30th. This week in water from last week, so we're going to do another one soon.
Could a textile coating repel COVID-19? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Environmental Protection Agency will take no steps to regulate a water contaminant that presents serious health risks to as many as 16 million Americans.
The compound called perchlorate interferes with the thyroid gland and has been linked to fetal and infant brain damage.
Perchlorate can naturally occur and has been found in the tap water of millions of Americans in at least 26 states. It's used as an additive in rocket fuel, munitions, and fireworks, and has shown up near military installations.
The EPA's move not to regulate the contaminant, which was first reported by the New York Times based on anonymous sources, comes despite the fact that the agency is under a court order to establish a standard for the compound by the end of next month.
The Obama administration determined that the chemical was a threat to drinking water and needed to be regulated, but they delayed issuing a limit. So the Natural Resources Defense Council sued.
In a settlement of that suit, after Trump was in office, the EPA agreed to a court order to establish a final standard on the compound.
Despite that order, the EPA is now expected to say that few public water systems contain perchlorate at high levels, so the costs of nationwide monitoring would outweigh the benefits.
The agency has not yet officially announced any policy change on the contaminant.
In 1987, the Montreal Protocol was reached to get rid of chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, the chemicals used in things like air conditioners, which depleted the ozone layer.
The ozone layer protects life on Earth by absorbing ultraviolet light. Without it, the DNA in plants, animals, and humans would be damaged.
However, a new study co-led by York University has found that phasing out CFCs may have inadvertently allowed higher levels of other harmful chemicals to flourish.
The replacement compounds, short-chain PFCAs, degrade into products that don't break down in the environment and have instead continually increased in the Arctic since about the 1990s.
The compounds can travel long distances and often end up in lakes, rivers, and wetlands, contaminating fresh water and affecting the health of invertebrates, including insects, crustaceans, and worms.
The PFCAs are not removed by current drinking water treatments and have already been found accumulating in human blood, as well as in fruits, vegetables, and other crops.
The chemicals are part of the same class of persistent substances known as PFAS, man-made chemicals that were used in firefighting foams and nonstick cookware that are currently receiving a lot of attention.
The researchers acknowledge the importance of the Montreal Protocol's positive impact on the ozone layer, but point out that even the best regulations can have unintended negative impacts on the environment.
Masks and gowns worn by healthcare providers on the front lines of the coronavirus epidemic can protect workers, but they can also absorb and carry viruses, leading to the spread of disease they were meant to contain.
Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh have created a textile coating that repels liquids like blood and saliva. The scientists tested the coating by putting it through washes, scrubbings, and even scraping it with a razor blade, and after all that, it remained just as effective.
While it has not yet been tested for COVID-19, it has been shown to be effective to stop the spread of viruses that cause acute respiratory disease and adenoviruses, which are common and can be inadvertently picked up in hospital waiting rooms and from contaminated surfaces in general.
The authors say that putting the coating on furniture could be a major step toward reducing the spread of disease. Their next step is to test the coating against COVID-19, which could have a huge impact not only for healthcare workers, but even the general public if clothing is made from the virus-repelling fabrics. A retreating glacier in Alaska is creating a dangerous situation that could trigger a tsunami.
Experts warned last week that the mountain slope above the Barry Glacier is unstable, and if it collapses into the water, it could create a massive wave rolling through Prince William Sound, threatening hundreds of people.
The unstable slope is currently moving slowly, but that could change at any moment. Earthquakes, significant rainfall, and lots of snow could lead to a collapse, as could just the ongoing retreat of the Barry Glacier due to a warming climate.
One of the scientists told the Anchorage Daily News that if there was a collapse, an initial wave of up to 1,000 feet tall could occur, leading to 30-foot waves in distant bays. However, the slide could just creep along for another couple of decades.
And finally, one of the most iconic works in art history is The Scream by Edvard Munch. The image of an androgynous figure with mouth and eyes wide open in a moment of terror has come to be the universal symbol of anxiety and despair.
The inspiration for the work came after Munch had been walking at sunset when suddenly the clouds turned a blood red and he sensed an infinite scream passing through nature. The figure in his work is covering their ears, trying to block out the shriek that they heard around them.
Munch created several versions of the scream, and each one is unique as he experimented to find the exact colors to represent his experience by mixing different pigments and media.
Unfortunately, as a team of international researchers has discovered, the extensive use of those materials created a challenge for the preservation of his famous pieces. The culprit? Moisture.
Using a high-powered X-ray, researchers found that the cadmium sulfide used to create the yellow in the sky and the lake behind the figure converts to cadmium sulfate in high moisture conditions, and the colors start to lighten and to flake.
And the authors write, cadmium sulfide-based yellows are also used in the works of Munch's contemporaries like Matisse and Van Gogh.
The researchers say their findings will help to set the right relative humidity and light settings around paintings and to show that art and science are intrinsically linked in order to preserve masterpieces for generations to come.
We hope you'll preserve this newscast by donating at h2oradio.org, and thank you.
Sitka has its second confirmed case of COVID-19, according to a press release from SEARHC and the city's Unified Command Center yesterday. The patient was tested for the coronavirus as part of a routine admitting procedure at Mount Edgecombe Medical Center. The patient was immediately isolated and is now quarantining at home. No other symptoms of the illness. Mount Edgecombe is working with the state to investigate the source of the virus and notify anyone who may have come in contact with the patient. Details about the patient's age and gender have not yet been released. The information about the new case likely will not be included in the state's official count until tonight. This is the second person in Sitka to test positive for the virus. First case confirmed on April 25th was a resident at the Sitka Long-Term Care. The patient, a man in his 60s, was isolated at the Marta Edgecombe Medical Center and subsequently found to be free of the virus and later released and sent home. There are currently 409 confirmed cases of the virus in the state, 15 non-resident cases.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. There really is a patron saint of salmon. I'll tell you more after this.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at amsi.org.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
As Alaska's salmon season gets underway, it seems appropriate to acknowledge the patron saint of salmon. It's Saint Kentigern of Scotland. Born long ago in 518, Kentigern was the illegitimate son of a king's daughter. He trained as a priest at a monastery where his sainthood evolved around a dangerous love triangle. Legend has it that the king suspected his wife of having an affair because she had given one of her favorite rings to a court favorite. The king took the ring when the man was sleeping and threw it far out into the River Clyde. When he returned home, the king angrily demanded that his wife show him the missing ring, and he threatened her with death if she couldn't produce it. In her fear and misery, the queen beseeched the priest Kentigern to help her. Kentigern took a fishing rod to the spot where the ring had been flung into the river. He quickly caught a salmon and cut it open. Amazingly, the ring was found in the salmon's belly. The queen was able to deliver the ring to her doubting husband, and peace was restored. From the time of his death in 603, Kentigern was regarded as Scotland's patron saint, and the cathedral at Glasgow was built in his honor. To this day, Kentigern's figure and symbols, including a salmon, make up that city's coat of arms. So who knows, perhaps a quick prayer to the patron saint of salmon will lead more fish to your nets. find links to more fish stories, plus Alaska fish catches, meetings, and more at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, who gives a big thanks to everyone fishing across Alaska and to all the coastal communities they depend on. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
51 degrees, some clouds, but a lot of sunshine, 71% humidity, a east wind of 12 miles an hour blowing at the airport, 10 miles of visibility, scattered showers this afternoon from 1 to 4, but partly sunny with a high near 52 most of the time, south winds 10 miles an hour, 30% chance of precipitation, isolated showers between 10 and 1 tonight, partly cloudy, a low around 43, southeast winds 5 to 10, 20% chance of rain showers. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 51, east winds 5 to 10, increasing 10 to 15 sometime later in the morning. So 26th of May, 5:26, the sun came up, goes down at 10:49, 17 hours and 24 minutes of daylight today, 3 minutes and 15-second daylight gain. 74 in 2006 was the high, 32 2017 the low. Short little synopsis, a front moves into the southern Gulf Wednesday afternoon. West of the Barrens, including Kamishak Bay, southeast 25-foot seas this afternoon and tonight, east 15 3-foot seas tomorrow. Barren Islands east, southeast 15 4-foot seas this afternoon and tonight, east 15 4-foot seas tomorrow. Marmon Island is Sitkanak, south 10 5-foot seas this afternoon, switching to east 15 4-foot seas tonight, northeast 20 5-foot seas Wednesday. Chiniac Bay, south 10, becoming southeast 15 this afternoon, 3-foot seas. Southeast 15, becoming variable 10 after midnight, 3-foot seas. Northeast 15, 3-foot seas on Wednesday. Marmot Bay, south 10, becoming east 15 in the afternoon, 4-foot seas, building to 4-foot seas this afternoon. East winds 15, diminishing to 10 after midnight, 4-foot seas. East 15, becoming northeast 10 in the afternoon, 4-foot seas tomorrow. Shelikof Strait this afternoon, variable 10, 2-foot seas. Same tonight, tomorrow, northeast 20, seas of 5 feet. Kodiak District tides. We had a low tide, a little minus low tide about an hour ago, so water's coming back in till 6 o'clock tonight. 6.4-foot high tide the evening, low tides at 11 o'clock, 3.0. The west side, Uganic tide was about half an hour ago, minus 1.3 feet. Evening high tide 6:12, 12.8 feet, and midnight 3.8 foot low tide. Seems kind of short. We did get our first weir report, and I was kind of looking forward to it. But then I looked at it and I thought, you know, it's not so good yet. If you've been out fishing, you probably know the weir count for Karluk. So far, they saw seven steelhead go through. One sockeye yesterday for a total count of 4 sockeye, 2 chinooks, and 57 steelhead. Upper Station's got a total of 160 so far this year, with 22 coming through the weir yesterday. And the buskin is at 0. Nothing's gone through the weir, which I don't even know is up yet, but they gave me a weir count for it. City Council's holding a work session tomorrow, or tonight. Tonight is the night. 7:30. Elected officials will be participating via audio video conferencing, and a few in-person public members are going to be there, but maybe. It says public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT. Encourage members of the public to email comments to clerks at city.kodiak.ak.us or by calling during the work session, 486-8610. More information, call the city clerk's office, 486-8636. Work session tonight. Regular city council meeting Thursday night. It's 26, so there is a community sit from the Kodiak History Museum tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Add a moment of mindfulness to your evening routine on Wednesday nights, live via Zoom on their Facebook events page. And CANA, the Alaska Sea Grant, and Shunack Tribe of Kodiak strongly advise against eating personally harvested shellfish in the Kodiak region at this time. They're currently seeing elevated levels of toxins. PSP toxins increase dramatically during summer months and remain through the fall in the Kodiak region due to the naturally occurring phytoplankton that bloom in warm water. All bivalves, clams, cockles, and mussels, predatory snails, and the digestive tissues of crab can accumulate PSP toxins, and people are at risk from eating personally harvested, untested shellfish. Bottom line, don't do it. Talk of the Rock coming up next.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.